Welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, Auckland's comprehensive arts show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe. We have a fabulous lineup of guests for you tonight, but before you get to meet them, for those not at Mount Smart Stadium tonight, let's kick off the show with a little Elton John and I'm Still Standing.
Just like ice, and there's a cold and lonely light that shines from you. You wind up like the wreck you hide behind that mask you use. And did you think this fool could never win? Well, look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way. And if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did? Looking like a true survivor. Feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time. Picking up the pieces of my life without you on my mind. I'm still standing. I'm still standing. Once I never could have hoped to win. You're stopping down the road and leaving me again. You made were meant to cut me down. And if my love was just a circus, you'd be a clown by now. No, I'm still standing better than I ever did. Looking like a true survivor. Feeling like a little kid. I'm still standing after all this time. Picking up the pieces of my life without.
Elton John's I'm Still Standing, and we're sitting today, Emma, instead of being at the Elton John concert, but what a great place to be.
I know, it's pretty exciting being here for our first time hosting Kick Arts.
Absolutely, and a huge thank you to those, our predecessors before us, Richard, Marianne and Georgia, who have handled the baton over to us. The pressure.
And of course to Joe and the team at Planet FM for making us so welcome.
Absolutely, and we've got a good group of people in the studio for our first show. No pressure, team, but we're relying on you to make sure this is Auckland's number one show.
So, in the studio tonight, from Over My Dead Body, Little Black Bitch, we've got Akina, Matua and Jason.
Kia ora.
And then we've got Taylor Rogers, who is a new Toy Fakati grad.
Kia ora, thank you for having me.
And we've got, from Dr. Drama, James Wendley and Rachel Longshore Park.
You're right.
So it's a bit of, for those of you that are listening in for the first time, the way our show works, it is a It's a panel interview. It's a bit like, I don't know, a bit of Graham Norton without the wine, and we don't have a red seat to tip any of you backwards on.
But we have got Easter eggs, because one of our guests has brought an Easter egg. So not quite the Graham Norton wine, hint, hint for next week's guests.
Yeah, but Easter eggs, marshmallows. Maybe we could just throw them at you if we don't like what you're saying. But we're going to start off with tonight. Actually, we're going to hear a little bit from the team at Over My Dead Body. So, Jason, tell us a little bit about this Over My Dead Body, Little Black Bitch. Sounds like quite a complicated title. Is it a complicated story?
Kia ora. It's a good question. No, I don't think it's complicated at all as a story. There is a lot of words in the title. It's actually Little Black Bitch is the first play that I've written as part of my Over My Dead Body series of plays. So there are three completed already, and about five more to come. So Little Black Bitch is our first big professional production from Tuatara Collective, who is producing this production. We did a development season last year with a collaboration between MIT and Tuatara Collective at the Basement Bats Theatre in Wellington and also in Waiheke. And this production is the dream coming true of finally securing enough funding to be able to put on a full-scale professional production with seven professional actors and set and costuming and real designers coming in and putting their little take on the work as well. So it's really, really exciting, and I'm really honoured to have these two with me tonight in the seat here. Mm-hmm. Akina Edmonds from Australia, who's come back, Kiwi Māori woman from Aotearoa but living in Australia, is back to do this production with us, playing the title role.
Being
a little black bitch. And also Matu Ngaropo, who is taking on the role of Tommy, who is the adult male figure in the story.
Fabulous. So, Akina, what's it like to be back in New Zealand working on a new musical?
It's really exciting. I feel like being back home and being part of a work like this, I actually feel a bit more pressure. Because it's home, and B, because of the content and the material and the project itself is... It's close to home and all about our youth, and so I feel more pressure, but equally as honoured to be here and part of this work. Yeah.
And then Matua, what brought you to this project, or where has it come from for you? Like, were you part of the original, or this is...
I've actually known Jason for a long time, a couple of decades now, so showing my age.
Since you were two.
Exactly.
A couple of decades, right.
One. Yeah, it's right. My birthday, 21. Woo! Sorry, I didn't bring the wine. No, we've known each other for a long time, and we've talked often, actually, about working with each other, and this is the first real opportunity that we've had to do that. I've been part of the development of this work as a director of workshopping the writing a couple of years ago, and I guess I, like Akina, feel really lucky and honoured to be in this work. It's a really diverse group of performers, and that's what the work demands, so it's pretty cool to kind of be one of the old hands and working with young energetics and, you know, trying to come together and work on this play, which has a lot going on, a really beautiful and important story that needs to be told right now.
So what do you think, for audience members thinking about coming out to Mangere Arts Centre, that is where it's on, isn't it?
Yes, we're
one of the places.
One of the places, yeah.
So people coming out there, what's something you think they're going to take away from this production?
I think the magic of the piece and the feedback that we've had since the development season, this one that we're doing coming up, and the script is remaining the same. There's a few changes, a few additions to some of the stuff. We've got an entire scene that's in Te Reo now. which the scene was in there before, but it was a little bit kind of more bilingual, whereas this version is more te reo. It's a classroom scene in a kura kaupapa, so the boys and their teacher are having conversations, and it's their English class. So they still do their work in English and present that in English, but when they're talking about the work and the teacher is kind of giving the direction of what the class needs to do and those kinds of things, and the conversations between the boys in the classroom is kiwaha and really fun and very, very kind of easy to understand what's going on if you don't speak te reo, because it's hilarious and funny. But, you know, little developments like that we're able to do with these actors who can come in and kind of take an idea on the floor and run with it very quickly. So what will audiences expect to leave with? A complete and utter transformative experience on the way that they perceive young people dealing with mental health issues. And also intentionally in the script, whilst we follow the young boy Rangi and his relationship with Toto, the little black dog that he befriends and then tries to protect and hide from everyone else as he feeds her, the more of a bitch she becomes. And the surrounding whānau in his world, his auntie who he lives with, Tommy, who's the adult male figure in the community, and his best mate, George, the way that they very, very obviously see him changing and they recognise things going on that aren't normal for him, but they're all too afraid or they don't know how to approach him about it. Instead, they have very in-depth conversations with each other about what's going on, perhaps, with this kid, but none of them really kind of take that, in retrospect, very easy step to go directly to that kid and say, look, what's up? You know, let's help you with whatever's going on. And the story is a really beautiful way to kind of work through that. It's a roller coaster, a real roller coaster of emotions. It's very, very funny. It's a black comedy in that the characters are so real. You will know, you'll see yourself in at least one of the characters very clearly. And then we take it into some spaces where it is much darker, but we see how by hiding something like a little dog that's nipping at your heels all the time can really, really isolate someone and make them feel very lonely and very and push people away. Mm. And yeah, so that's kind of, and the feedback afterwards has generally been really, really positive. Tōtata Collective, we've actually designed a whole initiative that runs with this project and all of our projects forward, which we call the Rata Initiative. It's based on a rata tree and how a rata tree is kind of born from a seed that lands on another tree and then grows its tendrils down to the ground as well as growing up, and it kind of relies on this tree to find its feet, which is a beautiful idea, and then once it's strong enough it stands alone and it's there with its older tuakana, its big brother or cousin or whatever that is, and then when that big tree finally passes away, that younger tree then takes that place in the forests of Tāne Mahuta. So our kaupapa around that is making sure that we do constantly find ways to support our audiences and our actors. So we have a counsellor on team and a counsellor in the house at each performance for the audience. In retrospect, we planned that and we actually realised that we didn't need that. The audience generally sat back and felt very relaxed when they knew that there was someone there for them, so they were able to sit back and really just absorb the show rather than worrying about where it might be going. So
that you've created a safe space for that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's, we think it's really, really important, especially within Te Ao Māori. That's part of our, yeah, our kind of way we think and we live, that there should always be support somewhere, and it should be very easy to find and see and feel within a space.
So, can I question you on something you mentioned in your introduction? You said we finally secured funding.
Yes.
I mean, it's election year, so you know, tell us about that funding journey and the challenges that you face. For our wonderful politicians listening.
Well, we were really fortunate this year. We were successful in our arts grant application, so we received a full arts grant from Creative New Zealand.
That's fantastic.
After all, you know, as most people that are listening to this program know, those application processes can be extremely difficult, take a lot of time, and often for unsuccessful result, which can be really heartbreaking and destroying. But we, you know, we've pushed ahead and we worked really hard on this one, and yeah, we're really grateful that we got it for this production.
Is that struggle because there's not enough funding in the pool, or too many people going for that same pool?
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's a bit of both. You know, yeah. I really do. I think it's there's so many. You know, the Creative Arts Fund for theatre projects is, it's not just for theatre. It's right down to raranga. You know, weavers, Māori weavers that want some funding to help with their little workshops that they might be doing. And then there's incredible sculptors and visual artists that are doing work and taking exhibitions overseas, and all of that feeds out of this one relatively small little pot of money. And so, you know, when you are unsuccessful, you take it on the chin and kind of really want to support all the other artists that did get the funding. But at the same time, it's difficult when you're planning something and wanting to really build.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to have a great time talking to you throughout tonight. Before we meet our next guest, we've got some music from a very special concert that took place in Spark Arena last night. Pentatonix came and took to the stage. It was a fabulous night of entertainment. Not a band member in sight, all done thanks to the good old styles of a cappella. And here they are with The Greatest Showman.
Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for. You've been searching in the dark, your sweat soaking through the floor. And buried in your bones, there's an ache that you can't ignore. Taking your breath, stealing your mind, and all that was real is left behind. Don't fight it, it's coming for you, running at you. It's only this moment, don't care what comes after. Your fever dream, can't you see, getting closer. Just surrender, cause you feel a feeling taking over. It's fire, it's freedom, it's blood and open. It's the preacher in the pulpit and your blind delusion.
Had massive FOMO on last night watching Facebook with so many people at Pentatonix, including you, Stephen. You didn't even buy me a ticket.
I know. It was the kids' Christmas present. It was a fantastic night. And started off with Samantha Jade, who was a Australian artist, won X Factor many moons ago. It was a great start to the night.
Yeah. All right, so we're moving on to our next guest in the studio, Dr. Drama. It kind of makes me feel like, I don't know, I kind of get this Dracula feel every time I say it. I don't know why, but I do. But anyway, welcome James and Rachel.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So tell us, what is this Dr. Drama? I see it was on TEDx.
We did get interviewed by TEDx. That was our producer having the hookups, which was fantastic.
Yeah, our wonderful producer, Tara. It was all to her.
Yes, so I am Dr. Drama. I have a PhD, having studied theatre, and I'm putting it to use in a sideways way in terms of making this show. So we're kind of describing it as a post-dramatic, meta-theatrical, solo lecture performance. So that's definitely my academic side coming in there. And it is about how you make and why you make and what to do with it.
So, Rachel, how have you found it as the director directing the doctor?
I was quite surprised when James asked me, because we've kind of been through a few kind of relationships, I suppose, over the past 10 years. He started as someone who's a few years above me in university, so I kind of looked up to him a little bit, and then he actually became my editor and then my friend, and now he asked me to, for me to come on board on this, which is quite a personal project as well. So it's not kind of like picking up any script, it's something that's really personal, and I was really conscious of not coming in and just stamping my mark on it or anything like that. It was quite a careful process of finding ways to complement the work and be sensitive around the material, because there are some parts of the script that have a real vulnerability that really drew me into it, so I really wanted to honour that. But it's been really exciting as well. Yeah, it's been a challenge, actually. That's probably one of the biggest things. It has been a challenge, but a great challenge.
And so, I mean, you've said it's like a lecture, so I was going to ask you about the complications, positives, negatives of being a one-man show, but I suppose you're used to that being a lecturer anyway, maybe?
Yes, so it's interesting because I really enjoy lecturing. That's probably where I feel kind of most comfortable. It is like a stage, and it is where I use my very kind of past acting training that I really kind of walked away from in terms of getting more interested in being an academic, behind the scenes making theatre. So I do put that to use in the lecture room, but it is still really different in terms of actually applying that to a theatrical space, and as Rachel kind of says, showing a vulnerability that you wouldn't normally show in a normal lecture to your students.
And the logo, or your is it emoji? Is it a little emoji? It's kind of like a little bish emoji, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a cartoon that was especially commissioned that shows me trying to figure out how to work a light.
So how many lecturers does it take to change a light bulb?
You'll have to come to the show and find out.
Is that one of the lines in the show? No?
It will be now.
You're heading it now.
Put that into the script.
I like that I've contributed. So open up to the rest of the panel. A doctor of drama. Who do you remember as your doctor of drama or your drama lecturer, or who were your standouts maybe that have encouraged you and brought you maybe to this space or that you still hold dear? Was it a James or was it a someone else? Who was it?
Oh, for me, definitely Miranda Harcourt. I think she is just an absolute legend. I learned so much from her. Vanessa Burns, another sort of standout, I'd say academic maybe, of theatre. There's a wonderful man who I worked with on The Lion King, John Stefanik. Just a genius man from New York.
What makes them stand out for you?
These different people? Just insight and perspective that is individual. You know, sometimes you listen to people that talk about theatre and it sounds like they're reading back a textbook to you, or it's, you know, like I don't know. For me, connecting with these people that I've mentioned, it was a very sort of personal experience that they shared of their own journey with theatre. It wasn't like, and something that they'd come up with themselves that made sense for me, not necessarily for anybody else, but I was like, man, I totally get what you're talking about and how I can apply that for myself.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Akina, who's your memorable teacher?
Well, it's funny. I've got a few. I've got two from NASDA. One was our movement coach. Her name is Maggie. Oh, I've forgotten her last name. Sorry, Maggie. She had an interesting way in approaching acting through the body and lots of different ways to physicalize being an animal and then morphing that into human. I forgot what that's called. I had Claire Thorley in Paraparum College, who helped me through a lot of drama stuff. And then when I got over to Australia, let me go back to NASDA. I had Alan Scott, who helped me through a lot of voice stuff. Then over in Australia, I realised that I maybe could do the acting thing, and that was through a man called Richard Sorrell, who runs the rehearsal room over there. That's where I got into screen acting and really loved that and felt like someone believed in me in that sense. And just recently, Liz Tantry, who is an incredible acting coach. Oh, my gosh. His passion, and like Matu, there's something just unapologetic about the way he portrays his perspective, and he's got this thing about the 2%, and he's like, it's not 2%. Everyone can do it. It's in your DNA, and he just gets super passionate. I love it. Lots of... And musically, it's like Matu on Lion King. Matu and I have worked together on The Lion King. Clem Ishmael has... he's just given so many gems that I hold on to this day, and I always will say, musical director from Lion King, who also does every show around the world, has shared this gem, and I just carry it with me. So just a few.
Well done. Well, that's a beautiful segue to the newest graduate in the room, Taylor Rogers. Welcome to the show, Taylor.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. Mm-hmm. I won't quiz you on all your teachers just yet. However, tell us a little bit about your journey since you've graduated. You've got a show that's just wrapping in bats in Wellington, heading to Auckland, and another one on the way. Sounds like you're out earning your keep already.
A little bit. Coming from toy, you're encouraged to constantly make your own work and, you know, feed your soul, you know, through your making your own piece of work, whatever that looks like. And with the Fringe Festival happening at the moment, it starts in Wellington. I'm doing a Fringe show there. It's called Girls on Drugs. And that was a show that I've made with a very funny friend of mine who went through Toi Whakaari with me. Her name is Lucy Dauber. And we've collected lots of stories about from our friends about things that they could be addicted to, or certain things in their life that they choose to spend their time doing or invest their energy in that might not be quite as good for them as they think it is. It's a really fun show. It's really fun, and I'm very lucky to have a fresh class of graduates from Toi Whakaari that I can work the show with, basically making it with 20 other people. So I feel very lucky to be doing that.
And then on to your second project?
Yeah, I'm working in more of a marketing producing type role on Stupid Bitch Wants a Puppy. That is a solo show. It's a multimedia show. And that's with another toy graduate, like way back in the day. Like, that's Claire Waldron. She's an incredibly inspiring maker, performer, director. She's a powerhouse of a woman, and she is making a show about the people in our lives that we could refer to as a stupid bitch, and she's taught me a lot about making and a lot about revealing your story through performance, and that's been at Bats part of the Six Degrees Festival, and that closed last night, so she had a great season there. And then in the Auckland Fringe, that opens up in 2 weeks' time on the 1st of March.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I should preface to our listeners at home, Taylor came in tonight and said, I know it's your first show, but I'm going to be talking about Girls on Drugs and Bitches. Is that okay?
Yeah.
But she also led on another secret that she used to sneak into Dr. Drama's lectures at Victoria University in Wellington. Oh, I'm getting the look across the room. Tell us a little bit about that. We've got a person who sat in this room.
I can confirm that he is the Doctor of Drama. I worked with James on a show along with Eleanor Bishop. It was called Boys in my final year at Toi Whakaari, and he was heavily involved in that. And then I found out that he lectured at Vic, and so I snuck out sometimes, most Friday mornings, every Friday morning, to attend his lectures. Yeah, so I can confirm.
And what was the highlight?
Watching how Victoria University students respond to questions versus how a Toi Whakaari graduate would respond to a question. One time you got us to shout out, or we were doing something, standing up on tables, and and that was pretty cool. And I think I was a little bit eager to jump up out of my seat.
So, James, did you notice the naughty girl at the back of the row?
I wasn't told beforehand that Taylor was coming in, so I did get a really good surprise when I saw her in the first lecture, and even better surprise when I saw that she came the next week too, actually. But yeah, that's a class, that's our first year performance skills class, which has over 100 people in the lecture room, so you do have to be inventive as to how to engage the group, which is why, yeah, get them up on tables, why not?
Yeah. And what's the long-term plan for you, Taylor? Now you've graduated, you're experimenting a bit with productions now. Mm-hmm. Where do you see yourself in the next few years?
I'd love to continue making work with my friends.
Yep.
And I think however I do that, I'd be, you know, thrilled to be doing that. I think I'd love to look at, see how far I can tour Girls on Drugs. I don't know what that quite looks like yet, where a next step for that is. Also on that audition grind, that's a thing as well. Mm. So if any opportunity was to pop out of that. But yeah, and just seeing how many roles in a production I can see myself at and get experience in each of those things would be wicked.
Don't get too good at all of them. You'll end up doing all of them.
And Matu, you've spent a bit of time on the road with different shows. What's that like when you talked at the start about, you know, the pressure of performing at home?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the journeys when you're away.
Yeah, right. So I started touring, in 2007, I worked with Inside Out Productions and toured with the Giant New Zealand Rugby Ball doing a solo show in that, in Paris, in London, in Tokyo, in Sydney, and then came back home for the Rugby World Cup in 2011. And then I, with three other amazing performers, started the Modern Māori Quartet in 2012. Get it, boys, get it. And we, over the last 8 years, have toured to the Cook Islands, Australia, Hawaii, recently New York. We performed in Soho just in January. Uzbekistan, China, Malaysia, Singapore, Korea, Japan, Germany, and a lot of time in the UK. And I've recently decided that I'm not going to live that life anymore. Because although it's really amazing and so exciting, and you get to meet amazing people and learn some stuff and also share who we are, because that's really the point of it, isn't it? Mm. Going away and taking our stories to people who don't know what Māori is or what New Zealand is, and showing them who we are and the fact that we're just the same. That's pretty cool. But I've realised that I just want to be home now. You know, like, it's a long time on the road, and the road's awesome. But really, making work that empowers who we are here in New Zealand and reminds us of the commonalities between us here as opposed to things that divide us is super important to me.
Sometimes we've got to leave home to know how important it is.
Yeah, for sure, and I definitely learned that by leaving home. I spent 3 years in Aussie with Akina doing The Lion King, and that was a massive amount of learning as well. Mm. You can share a bit about how tough and also amazing that was, eh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can. With the Lion King and musical theatre in Australia, I guess. It is. It's hard, but again, it's equally rewarding. So being on the road offers up an opportunity to discover parts of, well, mostly Australia in my life, that you may not have, you know, taken yourself out to have a look. The 8 shows a week for whatever it was, 2.5 years, which was 870 shows, you have to find ways to say no to things you love, like partying. So saying no was probably one of the biggest things I learned once I first got over there straight after NASDA. So I studied at NASDA for 3 years and went straight over to Australia. And I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. And they went, oh, my gosh, this is full on. Because then the side hustle is real. So once you have your first show, once you're in your first show, you're like, yes, made it. And then it finishes and you're like, hello? And there's no one. So you're like, oh, my God, I've got to do this on my own and find a way to make ends meet. And, you know, the glamour isn't always the glitzy, glitzy thing. So hospitality, nannying, teaching. And recently I came back in 2016 and did my yoga teacher training through a cool mate who I actually met on Lion King, Jason Tipatu, who's doing some incredible work via yoga and mental health stuff for our kids, which I think is amazing. So, yeah, going back to the musical theatre thing, it's the sacrifices you have to make in order to fulfill that creative dream, they're just as big as the dream.
And then after this particular show, Akina, you're going south slightly to replay the role of Dolores in Sister Act, aren't you?
No.
But could you?
Yeah.
That's my bad.
Wikipedia, no, was it?
There was talk. Availability.
Awkward.
Hashtag awkwardcentral.com, moving right along. I love
moving right along. But you did play it. There we go.
Yes, I did play it. I did play it. The Australasian premiere of Sister Act in New Plymouth, put on by NPOS. I had an incredible time. That was amazing to bring my Australian experience onto home soil. Again, it was such a scary and exciting opportunity. So, yeah, I really did love that. And the people in Taranaki are freaking amazing. And the love there was yeah, I carry that with me still to this day.
Awesome.
And coming back here and again bringing those skills from Aussie back to this work is super rewarding as well. And the things that Akina was just talking about in terms of the mental health stuff and serving our youth and serving the community and bringing back skills that we learn abroad it's kind of like what it's all about, you know? Like, we grow up, we leave home, we go and discover the world and discover who we are in that world, and then coming home to be with our people and help our people is, like, it's the most important and most rewarding part of the journey, coming back and realising that actually we have everything here.
Jason, there's a number of things out there in the arts and in all different arts forms around mental health at the moment. How do we measure that it's making a difference?
Tough. Really, yeah, it's really tough to measure any of those things. I mean, I think it's hard to measure art, full stop, you know, let alone the health services around arts. I think the biggest thing, and that's what we're doing in Tua Tata Collective, and why we've spent a lot of time on our initiative and our policies and all of those things within it, is making sure that there's knowledge from outside places that that come in to give us advice. For example, with Little Black Bitch, we've also been very, very generously sponsored by the Like Minds Like Mine with the Mental Health Foundation. We received one of their grants to put this project on. Auckland Council as well have given us some funding from the local boards. And, you know, for example, with the Mental Health Foundation, our colleague Gina Giordani at Like Minds Like Mine is very, very helpful in giving us advice and tools that we can utilise. But then also with us, we're making sure that we retain our side as well, so that we are making it our way safely.
Yeah.
We've got a Tui Matira Ranapiti Ransfield is our Māori Mātauranga advisor as part of Tua Tata Collective and a good friend of mine and my business partner Tawira Ormsby, who is very actively involved in everything we do and brings her perspective and her knowledge from a traditional Māori perspective. In Little Black Bitch already, we have facilitated, as part of a, you know, we've only had 2 weeks of rehearsal, of a 4-week rehearsal process, which is pretty normal. In fact, a little bit short, probably, for a full-scale musical production, professional level. But we've probably spent how many? Probably 4 full days out of those 10 days in Wānanga around the mental health for our actors. And that's not only for our actors from our perspective, it's not just for the actors, but it's for the actors to take away so that when we put those shows on stage in front of audiences and we hold forums after our school performances, for example, every single one of these actors is comfortable and confident and well prepared to be able to answer those questions effectively and make the right statements and not necessarily kind of put their foot in their mouth or twist things in the wrong way unintentionally. But also just become, you know, a lot of the mental health stuff, I think, is around being just a good person.
Absolutely.
You know, my partner and I, we did the Life Keepers course that is run by the Ministry of Health and run by LIVAR. So it's a first responder suicide training in awareness, observing, noticing the signs, and how to possibly proceed after that. So it's a full day wānanga, and it's really helpful. But we also found when we were there, we were like, a lot of this is kind of just being a really genuine person. Mm-hmm. And what I found, particularly as an actor and having worked as an actor and an artist, a lot of the stuff in terms of observing and being aware of shifts and changes and the way that someone might say something or their body language and those kinds of things is inherently part of our training anyway. You know, we spend years on stage in rehearsals kind of playing games and exercises around what can you tell this other actor is doing right now if they don't say any words, or how, you know, you would know straight out of Toy, I know that Christian Penny, you know, and his style of doing a lot of that stuff is really interesting. And so I think the arts is a really great place to be able to explore that. And I guess in terms of measuring the success of it, I don't think it's impossible, but I think the proof is in the pudding, really.
Absolutely. And if you're engaging with the audience, you're hoping everyone takes something away from it that can make a difference, whether that's speaking up or changing the way they perhaps act in their environment. I applaud your answer and I applaud your work. It's fantastic. We're going to take a short music break now, and Titirangi was in the news this week for changing their school bell at Titirangi Primary School. Residents took to Facebook as they were sick of hearing this song looped through the school all day, and we thought, we love this song, so let's share it with you. Yeah. That was dedicated to all the residents in Titirangi. And Titirangi Primary School, I applaud you. Nothing worse than those fire alarm school bells. So you go for it, and we look forward to playing your song next week. Let's see what you have in mind. Now, we've got a little plug here for a show called I Did It My Way. Each week, we'd love to promote shows that are on. We can't always get everyone into the studio, but internationally acclaimed Kiwi Jewish actor, comic, musician and writer Deb Filler has performed a hilarious, charming, poignant, multimedia worldwide hit to London, Toronto, New York, Vancouver, DC, Sydney, Jerusalem and LA. This brilliant storyteller, Deb, delights audiences with these mostly true stories of how deeply music can affect our lives. As Deb drives a car service in New York City, she takes us on a truly incredible ride with Leonard Cohen, reducing the Canadian folk singer to tears of laughter. They meet again in a story you will never forget. I Did It My Way is taking place at the Q Theatre from February the 18th to the 22nd. More information at theqtheatre.com. If you'd like your show promoted or have tickets to give away on air, please email kickarts1@gmail.com. There is lots of great theatre on as part of the Auckland Fringe Festival, so check out the Auckland Fringe on Facebook.
Awesome. Now, back to the panel. I've got a question, guys. If you could tell your 16-year-old self something, what would it be? Let's start with James, Dr. Drama.
Yes, this is interesting because I was thinking, okay, what was I doing at 16? And I was obsessed with acting. I was obsessed with musical theatre, and that probably is where...
theatre sports as well.
I was doing theatre sports. And that was probably where I was kind of seeing myself going. But it's I would tell my 16-year-old James, be ready for different challenges and new goals. And life is also circular because you will find yourself back on stage in...
You don't have to say how many years
later.
But you see, for you, you were an academic then as well. Your 16-year-old self... for our listeners, James was the Ducks of his high school.
Oh!
I was. I don't lead with that anymore because now I have the PhD, so...
Oh, right, sorry.
Ducks is basically...
But maybe that was the lead through, you know, your 16-year-old self saying, I'm the Ducks now, but you know what, one day I'm going to be Dr. Winley.
Yes, I sort of set myself goals of, okay, I'm going to conquer this. I'm going to try to become Ducks this year. I'll keep going through the education system. I'll become a lecturer.
I'll become a PhD. Okay, Rachel, what about you, your 16-year-old self?
16 isn't really a place I would like to go back to. I think when I was 16, I had a really, like, shaky sense of self. I think that's why I'm really drawn to work that is about identity, for one. So I think I would say be honest to yourself, be accountable, but don't be too self-critical because I had quite low self-worth and I needed to know that self-worth couldn't be... It's not quantifiable, you know, it's not something that can be measured and especially not by anybody else other than yourself if you're going to do that. Yeah, and I think everybody should kind of have that kind of confidence when they're that age because a lot of young kids don't, and that's... Yeah, why I love seeing work like the work that Jason and his team are doing because I think it does target that really vulnerable type of person, and I've made work particularly for that group as well because that's where my passion lies.
And do you think as a 16-year-old you would have ever seen yourself as being in the pop-up Globe doing the things that you have done?
No. No, not at all. Not at all. I had no idea what was happening. I had a very dark kind of idea of what was ahead. It was very... I couldn't see what was coming at all. And only in the last few years I've really started to actually start looking towards the future, and that's a really nice thing. And honestly, it's a lot about this community that has made me feel that way. So thank you.
Here we go, the arts community. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot to thank them for. Taylor, what would you say? You're probably the closest to 16.
Pretty large, yeah.
So 3 years ago, what would you have...
3 years.
4 years.
I would say to myself, spend longer staying up at night listening to your elders talk because they have the best stories and they're not around forever. And
beautiful.
And
great,
I think also go out and make my own stories, do the risky, dangerous things, Mum and Dad will always come pick you up, and if they don't pick you up, it makes for a better story anyway. That would be my advice, yeah.
Nice answer.
You've got to follow that.
She's good. She's really good.
So what
these new grads, hey? Oh, they've got all the answers.
Yeah, exactly. So what would you tell yourself 16 years ago, only 5 years ago?
Yeah, five years ago. To fly my freak flag really high.
Yes. Ah, are you wearing green ears when you say that?
I don't know.
You know the Shrek?
No.
That was a musical kind of thing that hit the ground.
Oh, I'm so bad. Sorry.
Just stick to Lion King, Emma.
Your 100% self is your magic. Mm-hmm. So beautiful. Go for it.
Yep. Jason?
Well, I think I'm going to kind of go against the grain a wee bit. I think, because I think most creatives have probably fantasized about going back in time and changing something they did a lot. And the more I've done that in my life, I've always thought, oh, if I changed that, that would have been a better moment. But then that would have meant I wouldn't have met that person and I wouldn't have met that person. And so I'd actually say you're doing okay. And just keep doing what you're doing and know that you've got the strength to be able to. You will get through those moments, because I think that's what's made me a person as I am today, the challenges that I've had and dealt with, and given me the material to write something like this, you know, that is very personal in terms of where it came from and why I wrote it. Yeah, and so I think my 16-year-old self was, I'm fortunate that he was ready to explore and managed to get through the things with family and friends. So that's what I'd say.
Lovely. And Akina, what would you be telling your gorgeous 16-year-old self?
Oh, gosh, she was so gorgeous. Very angry, but very gorgeous. two things, I think. The first one would be everything you need to achieve your dreams is already inside of you. So cliche, but you know, we tend to try and do this course and put that lipstick on and put that heel on and put that other thing on or do this other course to be like the people that we should be like. And in actual fact, the whole point is to, the thing that you're trying to hide about yourself is the thing that's your point of difference. So for me, just trusting that I have everything I need to make whatever dreams come true. But and the other thing on that is trusting that the universe has your back no matter what. Totally, totally has your back. And any planning that you think you're doing, I find it quite audacious now to think that my planning can conspire anything that that the universe can conspire. So stop the planning and just keep dreaming, because then the universe will just do its thing around you.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful people in the studio tonight, with Fringe Festival wrapping up in a little while. What's on the horizon for the rest of 2020? James, what's your plans for this year?
I'm really excited to go back to Victoria University, and got some great teaching coming up. In the third year, there is a production paper. So I get 20 third year of our theatre students, and this was put to me, this is my time to do it, and they asked me what I wanted to do, so I'm going to put together the two things that I love most in theatre, devising and musical theatre, and we're going to create a whole new show, and I have no idea what it's going to be like at the moment.
But you'll come back and tell us all about
it. I sure can.
We'll bring them in, and of course there'll be those that are sneaking in the back row anyway to have a look, so we could get updates from Taylor. Fantastic. What about you? What's the rest of your year looking like?
I have a one-night-only show straight after Dr. Drama, which will be at the Basement on Friday the 28th of February, and it's called An Open Apology, and it's a four-hour durational show, and that's written and devised by a group of us. I didn't write these names down, so I'm really sorry. But Nathan Joe is spearheading it, and he's a close collaborator of mine. And then after that, I have actually just secured an acting job, but I can't talk about it. Okay. So I secured work until the end of October, and I'm just really stoked about that, which is really nice, right? Yes. And it's doing something that I really love, which is like reaching out to kids and stuff, which is really cool. So, yeah, I'm really stoked about that.
Awesome. So like funding, you struggle to always secure the next thing in line. So
absolutely.
Knowing you're covered for the next little while.
Honestly, and that means I can actually focus on getting the funding for the projects that I'm really passionate about, which is I just did one called An Organ of Soft Tissue, which was about abusive relationships, specifically with 16 to kind of 21-year-olds, based on some real experiences. And we're looking at how we can kind of further that and develop that into something that's actually useful and potentially going into schools. So we need to do a lot of research on how to make that happen, but now I will have the time, which is, I'm so grateful. So,
some great context in the room for you today as well. Okay. So, Taylor, once your shows have wrapped, what's the plan for the second half of the year?
I'm looking at, I've just jumped on a project, which is a video art project named Shandy, and that's working with another Toi Whakaari graduate. Frankie has created this video art that, again, draws from lots of different mix and matchy parts of her life that she has received some funding from to premiere in Wellington, and then to figure out how to get these people to see her work. So looking at audience, looking at space, the work's awesome. I'm not quite sure how much I can say, but yeah, that's the rest of my year.
It's good to have a plan in place.
Yeah.
And Jason, I don't imagine you ever sit still for very long.
You know me. Yeah, really, really busy actually. So Tuatara Collective, we formed and kind of really kicked off last year, but this year is a massive year, so we've got some really exciting things lined up. Obviously LBB is going to happen and run through to the end of March, and then we there's the microphone just dropped down. We are doing the creative lead on the Motu Matariki project, which is a big festival in Waiheke, spearheaded by Artworks Theatre and Henemoa Elder, who has driven that project. And so they've employed Tuatara Collective and myself to lead the and direct the theatre component in the centre of that festival, which will be surrounded by other art forms in the art centre in Waiheke, and it will be a play in the centre called He Ahi Ka, which is another Over My Dead Body series play, which are a collaborative cast of local Waiheke people plus some Auckland-based students of XMIT and some professionals around that. And it's a collaboration with Rhea Hall, singer-songwriter Rhea Hall, who will be featuring her music and her songs in that.
Fantastic. Do you juggle many things at once? Have you got a number of projects?
I like to. You know, some people... I guess the reading books is the analogy. Like, people like to have multiple books that they're reading at the moment to keep them interested. I'm the same with work. The brain gets a little bit fried sometimes thinking about the same project. So it's good to be able to put one down and pick up the other one and keep working on that. But I also, you know, I'm one of those annoying people who has multiple skill bases. So my first and core skill is as a pianist, classically trained, and singer, musical director, vocal coach. So that is something that I often gets left behind, and I like to force myself to go back to get my bum on the piano and get that music back in my bones.
Because if I'm right,
on the piano seat, not on the piano.
Yes,
you started music from a very young age. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Tauranga.
Yeah. Tauranga. So my great grandmother was a piano teacher, and she was in her late 70s, early 80s when we were kind of little kids, and I was really fascinated with the piano, and my brother and I remember playing a piano duet with him when I was 4 at one of the great auntie's birthday parties or something. I loved music. You know, I was naturally quite good at it, and I enjoyed doing it. It didn't feel like a job that, you know, my brother and sister were like, oh, do I have to practice, you know, whereas I enjoyed it and continued that, and then kind of got into the singing and the acting side of things, and yeah, so I like to keep all those things juggling in the air.
So we've got I'm trying to say about collaboration. Just about all of you have mentioned the importance of collaboration. New Zealand's such a small place, isn't it? So I suppose it's that whole, we don't know who we're going to meet and where we're going to go, but How do you go about your collaborations? Is it seeing people you like, or how is it that you guys, if you had to give advice to new people like Taylor coming out? I mean, she's lucky because she's said she's got all her fabulous graduates to collaborate with, but what's the best way to go about this collaboration thing, do you think?
I would say people who challenge you. Don't be afraid to work with people who will challenge you. Don't work with people who you know will just say yes. Especially when you're telling stories and kind of interrogating why we're telling stories or who should be telling stories, I think it's really important to work with people who aren't afraid to have a hard conversation with you, but are also able to kind of put that to the side and still, you know, work as well, which is a hard balance to find, I'm not going to lie.
Yes, it's quite an easy word to say, collaboration, but to do it well is really hard and requires a lot of honesty and openness and interrogation as individuals and as people working together, because it's about the human relationships and what are you both kind of, everyone involved in the process, what are you offering to each other and then your audience of the art that you are making. Mm. So it requires that openness all the time.
A lot of respect for other people in their spaces and their practice and what they need and their mental health. And as soon as I walk into a space where I feel like mental health isn't being taken into account, I immediately am just like, oh no, I want to leave. I don't feel safe. So that's super important, I think.
Because the beautiful thing is that everyone will have a different way of working, so you can't expect that just because it works for you doesn't mean it's going to work for the other person. Yeah. But that's where the strength is, if you can really harness those differences.
Anything from over the other side about collaboration?
I'm with James. Like, I think you have to be 100% honest and figure out what it is inside you that you want to say, and work with the people who are going to help you say what you want to say in the best way for you to say it. So they are generally people who will challenge you, like Rachel said, but also people who will look after your state of mind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have a sort of care for each other as well, because being a collaborator is hard. Because we're so often right. Do you know what I mean? It's like we're so right, but then we need to be brave enough to be wrong.
Absolutely. I think there was a beautiful quote that I read the other day, actually, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it talked about collaboration, and that collaboration shouldn't be one person asking other people to come and work on their project. Rather, it should be a space where two people can come in and bring themselves into one project. And that's a huge part of what I try and do with Tuatara Collective, is rather than, of course, I mean, I have people that I want to work with because I know what they can bring to the space, but at the same time, you know, it takes me longer leading up to a project to kind of get those people on board with the project, rather than just a job. You know, it's like, are you interested in being part of a project that you can bring something into? It's a difficult question, but I really do think that collaboration is, if you're going to use the word collaboration, you've got to be genuinely acknowledging the word that it's not one person leading a project where other people are working for them, because that's not really a collaboration to me. That's just good management. Whereas collaborating, when you're going into a space going, what is this going to do, and who's best to, you know, what mana do you bring that's going to, we'll say, you know, we need a classical piano piece. Kia ora, I'll do that because that's my mana. We might say we need amazing musical theatre voice and a stunning woman who's been on The Voice as well, like, to sing something there. And Akina's mana, we would say, well, Akina, would you like to take that lead on that a little bit? Anyway, it's that kind of thing.
You're also really good at, going back to what you said about thinking about people who you want to collaborate with. Yeah, so Jason Timete is pretty amazing with why he spends time thinking about why he wants people and what they can bring to the piece and the energy, the mana, And you see him kind of mull over that for some time, and so he's already worked out the dynamic of the room before we even show up, which I think is a gift in itself.
Can I just jump onto that, though? Because often it's not so much that as it is what you were talking about earlier in trusting in the universe. And I often have the most uncanny experiences. For example, Akina, literally 3 weeks before we started our very first workshop, which was to develop this thing from scratch, the actor who I had cast and we had got on board to play the title role had to pull out because she had something else come up. And it just so happened that I was wandering through Pack and Save in Whakatane at 9 a.m. on Boxing Day whilst I was staying with my family, and who should walk past but Matu and Akina. And I just said to you, you know, back from Australia, and I said, what are you doing in 3 weeks? Are you going to be still in New Zealand? Do you want to come and do this thing? And, you know, it's gone from there. But I really encourage people to trust in the universe and those little tohu, the little signs that pop up here and there. There's a reason why your gut has gone funny right now with this person you're talking to, because there's something connected with them in a way that's either good or bad. Sometimes it could be a negative thing, but the mulling over things, which you talked about, is often trying to decipher what that feeling is saying to you. And I'm pretty lucky so far. I think I've got it right. But it really does help when you're trying to put your energy out to find people to feel the energy and come to you, and you end up with magical people in the room.
Even when those special moments happen at Pack and Save.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a little plug now for Auckland Council's Music in Parks, taking place all over Auckland this summer. We've got some music now from the Feelers, who went from busking on street corners to becoming pioneers of the Kiwi music industry, with a quarter of a million albums sold and 5 multi-platinum albums. They are performing at Auckland Council's Music in Parks next Sunday at Lloyd Ellsmore Park. And here's a little taste of the Feelers.
Come, my little Venus, can't you feel it's in all of us? Like the light, we'll see you soon. Give up yourself and dive into the moon. And I don't mind being with you, knowing I'm by myself. There's a river in all of us that's dry. As you are in me, there's a river in all of us that's dry. Are in me. Come, my little Venus, wrapped in shadows. Yeah, you're one of us. I hear the footsteps inside your head, walking, trying to find yourself. I found myself. Let me in, let me breathe, yeah. Found myself in you, oh yeah. So come, my little Venus, come, my little Venus, come, my little Venus, come, my little Venus.
that you feel, it's in all of us. Like the light, we see a sun, give up ourselves and dive into your room. And dive into your room. Come, my little Venus. Come, my little Venus. Come, my little
The Feelers performing at Auckland Council's Music and Parks next Sunday at Lord Ellesmore Park. And in breaking news, Elton John has had to take a break from the show tonight, seeking medical treatment. He's been suffering with pneumonia, walking pneumonia, they've called it. Medical teams had to come on during the show with a stethoscope. It sounds like he has got back up on stage, which segues nicely into Emma's next question about memorable moments.
So he is still standing, yes. Maybe Stephen had the universe treated Stephen well and let him choose that song earlier.
Wow.
Maybe it's your fault. It's your fault.
Better be careful what I choose next week.
Oh, yeah, we had be. So I'd love to know from all of you, what is your highlight or memorable moment of your career thus far? Memorable moment or highlight? It's a big one, I know.
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Do you want to go first?
Oh. Okay. So I was working on Beautiful, the Carole King musical. Okay. As a whole, that entire production was so phenomenal, from producers, yes, Michael Castle, to stage management, to company management, to the cast, to the music, to my track. That was the first show that I was really, I really said to myself, okay, no more understudying. And so that was the first show I had just one track to worry about. There was another thing about the memorable moment. Oh, during that process, I won't go into too much detail, but I'm just going to mention fairies. So I just have this, I believe in fairies, and I kind of mentioned it during our rehearsal process, and you know when you're trying to, like, get to know everyone and be super cool, I mentioned my fairies during a choreography call, and the American choreographer was like, Akina, are you with us? And I was like, I'm so sorry, I was with my fairies. It was the purple one. And I was like, oh, what the embarrassment is going on? I just said that out loud. I was meant to just wait for, like, bunker talk. And then she was so, she totally accepted that. And then we called that moment in the show, Let's Go From Fairies. So that was pretty amazing for me to bring my fairies into this professional forum. So,
beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah. And I must applaud Beautiful, one of my favourite musicals ever.
Oh my God,
absolutely
yay!
Loved it. Went and saw it in Sydney and made my children come over and see it in Brisbane because it was just so
oh
good.
Oh, my
so
gosh. So I played Janelle Woods in the Shirelles.
Absolutely.
Well, not all of them.
Stunning. One of my favourite musicals.
Oh, yay.
Taylor, what's your memorable moment?
My memorable moment, I think, with any opportunity that I've had to be performing in front of anyone is just to see, look out and to see that sneaky person that snuck along to your show. Just like when you look out to your lecture theatre and see Taylor from Toi Whakaari up the back. I think any show, particularly when you didn't know they were coming, when they're from a different part of your world and then all of a sudden they're in
you know, arts world watching your work, that's probably the best, most wholesome surprise you can get.
Beautiful. Jason?
I think mine was, I was in a show called K-Road Strip with Okereke Dance Company, 2011 we began it, and it was in Edinburgh in 2015, and there was a moment in Edinburgh when we were performing, I played the character Horsey, the homeless guy, it was pretty powerful kind of thing, but there was a moment where I realised that an entire, almost full house of non-Kiwis were really vibing the show, that they really knew nothing about a culture, and the review, actually one of the reviews said, I have no idea what I just saw, but it was fucking amazing and you must go and see it. 5 stars at Edinburgh was pretty epic, and that was the moment where I went, right, our stories are more important, let's write more.
Fantastic. No. Matu, I'm curious to ask you that same question, given the list of countries you just rattled off, what's your memorable moment?
I think first Circle of Life, playing Mufasa on the top of the rock, and looking out, and my mum was there. That's pretty big.
Pretty epic. And am I right, you spent a lot of time in ice baths as well at the end of the show?
I did. Actually,
I remember waiting backstage for you one time to meet you outside Sydney Theatre, but we had to wait forever because you were in ice. Literally.
Well, it is true. Well, my normal track, which was an ensemble track because I covered Mufasa and Scar, was the most physical track. Like 3 hours non-stop sprinting, jumping, doing a stampede. Like, it's just crazy. And so the double show days I would get in an ice bath because you have to get up and do it the next day and not be too sore. But yeah, Mufasa is a great track because it's, you know, get on a rock, hold a baby up, teach a lesson, sing a song, die in a gorge, have a cup of tea and a scotch finger.
Now available in chocolate. If you found those in the supermarket, they are insane. Lucky last. Over to you two. What's your memorable moments?
I've got a cheeky two. I've got my biggest kind of thing I'm proud of was I was really lucky enough to be invited to write a feminist version of Taming of the Shrew by Ugly Shakespeare Company.
Ugly Shakespeare!
Yeah, really cool. And I didn't actually realise to how many schools it was going, and it was a little bit risky. It was feminist. And it went to over 70 different schools, and that was a really, really cool moment when I realised that I'd been given the opportunity. So that was really cool. And then other stand-up moments are, for me as a director, when you hear audience members you don't know talking about your show when you're there. And when I did Organ of Soft Tissue, which was about consensual relationships and stuff like that, there was a couple in front of me, and when the lights went down and everything, when the lights came back up, the woman turned to the men and said, we need to go home and talk about our sex life. and it was in quite a loving way, but it was just like, oh wow, that's really gratifying. And it was just, it made it so worth it when I got to go backstage and tell this cast that what they'd done had actually put that message across. So yeah, when you have that, that's such a lovely thing to be able to share.
That's crazy, definitely.
Yeah.
Life-changing.
Yeah, so good.
And for me, I actually was just thinking of my students, and you know, teachers will know that there are always memorable moments in the classroom, right, Emma?
Yeah.
And you know, just to take one example, in my class,
when you met me at school. Oh, that's so lovely, James. Oh, sorry.
In our performance class last year, there was a mature student who signed up who had not done acting before, and it was the kind of from each assignment persevering until you kind of get there, you've learnt all your lines, and it's that real kind of sense of achievement that yes, you can do this, and it really kind of meant something. So it's always just kind of seeing that growth from your students, which is just, yeah, so rewarding.
So we're kind of coming to the last end bit of our show. So I'm going to give you each your 2-minute shameless plug time. So we're going to take it away with Jason and his show. Give us 2 minutes. Hit us.
Kia ora, everyone. Over My Dead Body, Little Black Bitch, an award-winning play by Jason Temete with an amazing 7-actor-strong professional cast, happening Mangere Arts Centre the 3rd to the 7th of March, Tapac in Western Springs from the 11th to the 14th of March, Waiheke Island at Artworks Theatre on the 16th of March, That's a free show, by the way. 116 in Whangarei, 19th to the 21st of March, with support from Creative New Zealand, like Minds, like mine, and Auckland City Council. It's an amazing piece of theatre. You will love every minute. There's song, there's dance, and there's a story that will really, really give you a good punch in the stomach, but at the same time wrap you up in the biggest, warmest cuddle that you've ever had, and want to go home and wrap that cuddle around every single other person you know.
And Jason's also let me know that if you keep an eye out on Facebook on our page, he is giving Kick Arts 2 tickets to give away to our listeners. So look out for a competition. We'll put it up tomorrow, and you may win the opportunity to get along and have that warm cuddle that he just described from Little Black Bitch.
Can I also add one thing? We are doing 2 school matinees that are free. So if there's any teachers that are listening in Auckland or Whangarei, then please get in touch with us. Booking tickets, www.tuatara collective.com, or you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Tuatara Collective.
So watch out tomorrow for that competition. Here we go, Taylor, take it away.
All right, first up, Stupid Bitch Productions. Should we just start from there? We're bringing Stupid Bitch Wants a Puppy to the Auckland Fringe Festival. That's the 1st to 3rd of March at the Auckland Old Folks Association. At the moment, we've got 2 shows a night, so you can watch one, come back for the second time. That's tickets for that one. You want to go onto the Auckland Fringe website, so that's www.aucklandfringe.co.nz. Later on in March is my show that I'm doing with my lovely colleague Lucy Dauber, and that's called Girls on Drugs. That's the 15th to the 18th of March. That's actually in Wellington, so you'll have to book a flight to Wellington if you're in Auckland, or go down to Bats Theatre in Wellington, and tickets for that are at fringe.co.nz. for that's for Girls on Drugs, the 15th to the 18th of March.
Awesome. And moving right along, Dr. Drama.
So Dr. Drama Makes a Show is premiering next week at Q Theatre in The Vault. That's the 18th, the 22nd of February at 8:30pm. We are a pre-fringe event. So there's ourselves and Get Out of Our Letterbox before us, and the works of William Shakespeare by Chicks after us. So we're part of Summer at Q. We're all part of Auckland Fringe, but before it all explodes, you can get in early to see our shows, and I think they will make a really great... see all three, because you can, in one night at The Vault. And then in the 3rd, the 7th of March, I am taking the show to my home university now, Victoria University, and performing at a part of the New Zealand Fringe in Wellington at 5:30pm. So tickets for the Auckland season is at qtheatre.co.nz, and for Wellington Fringe, fringe.co.nz.
Fantastic, and we'll make sure we promote all of these shows and more up on our Facebook page and Instagram. And Emma, who have we got coming into the studio next week?
So join us next week. We've got Luna Collective, which includes one of those ugly Shakespeare girls that performed in Rachel's show last year, Bridie Sisson. We've got Can I Get an Underground Location and a Mythical Creature, a devised D&D fringe performance. We have the Project Team, the Hip Hop Freestyle one-on-one battle as part of the Fringe Festival. And we have Mask Productions, who are currently working on Tick, Tick, Boom, which is going to be on at the Dolphin Theatre. And Game Face, all the way from London. Lexi Clear and the team from London, who are also part of the Fringe. So we've got a really full-on show next week, so come in and join us.
Matu, you look pretty happy about Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yeah, I love that show. I think it's great.
Fantastic. And Emma, how can people stay in touch with us over the next week or so?
So find out more about Kick Arts. Email us, let us know what you've got coming up. Would you like us to review your show, your art exhibition, your book launch, anything? kickarts1@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook on Kick Arts, or on Instagram at kickartsnz.
Fantastic. And a big thank you to all our guests in the studio for our first show. Absolutely wonderful to have you on tonight.
Thanks for having us. You nailed it.
Thank you. And since you mentioned beautiful before, let's just end the show with a little bit of beautiful before we play out. I'm Stephen.
I'm Emma.
And thanks for listening to us on Kick Arts. We look forward to seeing you in social media world.
Make sure you go out there this week and kick some arts.
Yes. You got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world of the love in your heart. And people are gonna treat you better. You're gonna find, yes you will, that you're beautiful as you feel. Waiting at the station with the workday window blowing, and I got nothing to do but watch the passers-by. Mirrored in their faces I see frustration growing, and they don't see it showing. Just a lullaby.